This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. For 17 years, Marcus Crowder was theater critic at the Sacramento Bee, one of only a few African-American writers across the country who held that title. He was among the people that I wanted to hear from in the months following the police-involved shooting of Stephon Clark. The conversation you're about to hear was recorded just 2 months after Clark was killed. And for context, I asked Marcus to share a bit about his family history and the atmosphere that he grew up in.
My dad was in the Air Force, and we lived around the world most of my early life. We lived in the Philippines. We lived in England. He was an officer, so he had access to a number of interesting things through the service. My mother was always a teacher. That was the background. It was pretty middle class. They were extremely involved in civil rights, and my mother was part of the Civil Rights Commission. My father was president of the NAACP here in Sacramento, co-president actually with Cornel West's father. They were co-presidents at the same time. There was always a lot of discourse around civil rights in my house, of course.
Because you were in a military family, you get some of that military upbringing. So your parents, I can assume, were teaching you about being a good person, being a young person with military uniform kind of structured attitudes about life, and also being a young Black man, an African American. Did all of that kind of go together into life lessons, or were there separate times that they talked to you culturally about who you were?
Well, both. Certainly, when you are in the service and you're in the world, you're taught you're representing the United States of America when you're somewhere else, and you're representing your family as well. But I was always taught to have a certain respect for everyone, and certainly, men and women in uniform, because my mother always used to say, you never know who they are or what they are. You just treat everyone the same with a certain amount of respect. And that was, a very healthy, useful lesson to carry into the world. But then also, it has been mentioned many times now, but my parents certainly had the talk with me in terms of like how to behave, how to act, how to basically stay alive. If you are ever in a situation in which you're confronted by law enforcement, you have to behave in a certain kind of way. It came in handy.
That leads me and leads us right into the story that you told me that I was hoping that you would share, and maybe other experiences as well. But let's start with that experience.
So there are two. I think about my experience as a Black man, and many people have them. But I was driving down I Street going to get my tires fixed. And I was driving down I Street.
How long ago was this?
This is probably about 3 years, maybe 4 years ago, okay. Fairly recent. And just driving down, I had sunglasses on and maybe a hat, and about on 20th. And there was a police car going to cross I and go to J. And I could see, I could just see him in the corner of my eye as I was going by. And as I passed, he turns on his blinker and pulled out after me. And after two blocks, he pulled me over and I stopped. He came up to the car, and I always get my license out, quickly, and so I'm not going to be fumbling in my pockets for them to be worried about that. And he comes up to the car, and he says to me, "I bet you wondered why I pulled you over." I was just sort of shocked and stunned. Is this a trick question, or are you serious? No, I don't wonder at all why you pulled me over. I know why you did, but I played along. I said, "Yeah, I do wonder why you pulled me over." "Well, I noticed that you have, a little brake light is out in the back of your car, and I just wanted to let you know that. Can I see your license?" And of course, he takes my license and goes back and runs it to see if he can, get anything on me. I was just shocked by the question because, in terms of everything that's going on, for someone to say, "Are you surprised that I pulled you over?" It's just like, not at all. There was nothing for him to find, and he said, "Yeah, get your light fixed." And so I said, "Okay."
You'd been profiled.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So I was profiled once when I was younger in a way that now feels much more dangerous than that because I was broad daylight on I Street and people are, you know, cars are going back and forth. But I used to live in Los Angeles and drive back and forth to come up here to visit my family. And one time driving from Los Angeles on Highway 5, I was pulled over by a highway patrolman. And I don't know if I was speeding or not. I'm not sure why he pulled me over, but he pulled me over. And as he comes up to the car, I roll down the window. He said, "I think I smell marijuana in the car. I need to check." And he just opened up the door and rifled my glove box and, you know, the ashtray and underneath the seat looking for weed. And I just sat there thinking, you know, you can't really do that. I mean, I don't think I said that, but I thought that. And he didn't find anything. And he just let me go. And later I just realized I'm in the middle of Highway 5. I mean, you know, in the middle of nowhere. What could have happened? You know, anything. I mean, he could have like pulled a bag of weed out of his pocket and put it in there and said, "Look what I found."
You're telling these stories vividly. What kind of an imprint did those experiences have on you?
Well, it makes you very wary. And I know several policemen. You know, I know law enforcement people. I know that they are people. I know they have an incredibly hard job. And they put their life on the line, and that, there's no doubt about that. I try to think about that, temper my feelings about that, but as I said, I also know if you don't have a certain ability to just sort of remain calm, I think, but who knows, even if you're just remaining calm, there's so many stories out there of things happening to people who didn't seem to do that much to deserve the response, that you feel uncomfortable. As a Black person, I feel uncomfortable.
The level of conversation around experiences like this changed 2 months ago after Stephon Clark. I think you started telling that story in a different way because I get the sense that you had kept it very private if you'd told anybody at all. What's different now for you?
It's a much more public conversation. People want to know, does this really happen? Is this really true? For some people, there's a level of incredibility about it that, because it has never happened to them and they don't understand what it feels like and they don't understand what it looks like when it happens, that to hear someone say, "This happened to me and I wasn't really doing anything. I was just," the expression, of course, "driving while Black." I just think people are now aware that this does happen. People are not making this up. And that's why there is a level of outrage, I guess we'll say, because people understand it's like, this needs to stop.
You're listening to Marcus Crowder, and he is the first of a number of guests that we're going to be talking with in the spirit of civic and civil conversation about culture, about change, about being African American, and the shift that so many people hope is happening in this region. In your work as a theater critic for the Sacramento Bee, did being African American make a difference? Was it unusual that you had that job?
Yeah. When I was theater critic at Sacramento Bee, I was one of either four or five people of color in the country who were theater critics at major newspapers. For a while it was four, and then for a while it was five. It is being talked about much more now how having that perspective is necessary and important. And I think it allowed me to address certain things. Obviously, you're writing about certain plays that are written from an African-American perspective, or plays that are not, or casting issues. And certainly there's ideas of colorblind casting and how that works or doesn't work. And I think I was able to bring a perspective to that and talk about that that someone else may not have. And the Bee did not hire me to be Black theater critic. They hired me to be the theater critic. They knew that I was Black, of course, but I wrote about all kinds of things, and that was my job. But you, of course, bring your life experience to the work, and I think it enriched it.
Do you believe attitudes and behaviors are changing in this time since Stephon Clark in a way that can be permanent in this community?
I think so. I think it has to be, is that people are, their awareness is being heightened, and they're understanding that we need to make these changes. And it's that kind of thing where people start to say, well, oh, you know, we're not that kind of community, but obviously we are. It is something which I think there are a lot of people who don't want to be that. You know, that's not who we should be. And everybody wants to be safe. Everybody believes in law and order. They just want it done fairly.
You have had to reinvent. I think you're still somewhat in that transition since the bee layoffs. It was noted that you received a creative economy grant from the city of Sacramento. So talk about that project and some of what else you've been doing.
I had an idea about writing a play about a group of people who are putting together a candlelight vigil for peace. And I had that idea for several years. And I had a rough idea of what I wanted to do and what it would be about. And because there were so many of these things happening, and I like the idea of a group of people who are a community but don't even know it, organizing around this event. And so I put that all together in a grant when I got laid off from the Bee. So I was able to have, I had some time on my hands, among other things. And the grant timing came up. This is kind of what I want to do, is the idea of the grant beyond writing this play and performing it was to be able to pay professional actors, designers, crew people to put the play on in a part of the city where professional theater is not done for an audience that does not usually receive it. And so that was all part of the grant. A number of professional theaters have said that they are supporting it. B Street is, and Capitol Stage is, and California Musical Theater are all offering support in various ways.
I want you to talk about this phrase, cultural appropriation.
Yeah, cultural appropriation is a very tricky idea, and it's the idea of using someone else's culture exploitatively. These are very subjective things, and I think culture is out there to be shared, and people borrow from it, borrow from each other's culture all the time. You know, if someone is taking something, you know, there are a lot of singers who are influenced by Stevie Wonder, for example. It doesn't mean they're stealing Stevie Wonder's culture, but they would say, you know, how could you not be influenced by him if you like a certain type of music? And I think Stevie Wonder, I've heard him have this conversation with someone saying, well, so-and-so, you know, sounds just like you. And he said, well, you know, I think that's a tribute. And the singer as well said, you know, look, I love Stevie Wonder. Yeah. And, you know, did I try to sound like him? Yeah, but I don't think I do. That's, you know, it's an insult to Stevie Wonder to say that. But the culture is out there and people are going to be influenced by it and is going to meld. And so there are people who cross genres all the time. So it is... It's a very tricky thing, I think, and it does exist, of course, and there are people who take something and then just kind of piggyback off of it, and it's not fair.
Let's talk about that video by Donald Glover, This Is America.
There's a couple things. And first of all, I told you I just filed this story for American Theater Magazine, and I'm talking to an African-American playwright named Idris Goodwin. And at one point, when I was interviewing him, he said, you know, all African-American artists, an African-American art is about disruption. And it was a very interesting comment. And I'm thinking specifically about Donald Glover and his work. And I've been watching the show Atlanta. It's really extraordinary. And it really applies to that because he is disrupting what we think about race, about African-American artists, you know, about music videos. And he's really bringing in a lot of elements that are uncomfortable for people, but then force you to have to deal with, you know, why am I uncomfortable about that? What did he do? What's he talking about? What is this about? Someone who is an artist in a certain time and place has the ability to do that. You know, artists haven't always been willing to compromise what might be their popularity or level of success in order to say something not everybody wants to hear them say.
You write about and review jazz music, and it occurs to me that that's what jazz did.
Exactly, and that's exactly what the comment that Idris made was in relation to, actually was in relation to hip-hop and then jazz, because he's very much based in hip-hop culture, and he was referring to jazz as well. He was saying that's what jazz artists were doing. They were making a kind of music which people could relate to, but then they were also, yes, I'm in this box, but see where I take you while we're in this box of this music. So, and it is often said that playing jazz was a political act just because of what it did a certain time and place. So it's very interesting how people use the art and use the music.
Can you just give me one more look at your own self-identity, how you see and feel yourself as a person in this country, given all the different themes and experiences that we've tapped on in this conversation?
What is interesting to me about the position that I had at the B and then being the theater critic and also being Black theater critic and also being, you know, interested in lots of different types of arts and culture was the way in which I was able to put things into the paper, and then someone else might not, just because, you know, this is what I'm interested in, but I think everybody could be. So I'm interested in Greta Gerwig, and, you know, wrote about her before when I first discovered her and found out that she was from Sacramento. I'm also interested in Colson Whitehead and his novel The Underground Railroad, and can bring an idea of that to the paper, or I can, as I said, talk about the idea of colorblind casting and did it work and was it appropriate in a play at Sacramento Theater Company that someone else might not have written about because they didn't think about it or they didn't want to go there. I felt like, why not? I've been doing this a long time and I trust my instincts in terms of this is worth talking about.
So there's one more story you wanted to share.
So one other thing about my family, when we came here, and we came here from overseas, and we first moved to Foothill Farms, which was a really charming little area. There were not many Black families there. There were a couple, but it was you know, middle-class, working-class area in Sacramento, in which I always felt extremely comfortable. And we were the only Black families in many, many blocks, but there were never any issues. And the kids there that I grew up with, I'm still friends with, and I still know, you know, most of them, you know, very well. Then at a certain point, while I was in high school, my parents bought a house out in Carmichael off of American River Drive and Jacob Lane. Black families lived all over Sacramento, and there were different areas in which Black people lived, and it is that way, and it was that way. But this is an area where no Black families lived, and it was just something that my parents very subtly did, and I know they never talked about it, but I know it was very conscious on their part to buy a house there where no Black families lived, as opposed to moving somewhere where lots of Black people lived. I mean, it's just the kind of thing my father would do.
Nothing was said to you about it being part of a life experience.
No, they just did it. I know now that it was very purposeful. I don't have to go where you tell me to go. I can go where I want to go.
That was part of our May 2018 conversation with former Sacramento Bee theater critic Marcus Crowder. You can find the longer original versions of all three of today's segments at capradio.org/insight. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight is produced by Kate Gonzalez and Cody Drabble. Our digital team is Chris Hagan, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. We had help from Helen Barrington and Antonio Munez. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us.